I missed you so much.
This is a good day.
Dear Asami, where'd you come from, little cutie?
Dear Cora, I'll destroy you.
Your fiancé?
What do you mean?
This can't be happening.
Well done. She seems very threatening.
Look how cute! Does this mean I'm the master now?
Actually, we're doing fine.
How?
And then she dies.
Think someone is pulling your chain, Gumdrop.
Are you kidding me?
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
We're talking minimum 4 hours.
We'll always have Kale.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar, The Last Airbender, and The Legend of Korra podcast for DongBufeng.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Mel.
Hello.
Sam.
Hi.
Allie.
Hi.
Britt.
Hola.
And Delaney.
Hello.
Today we'll be discussing Korra Sami and Mike and Brian's recent Tumblr posts, someone singing about them.
Allie.
Anyway, we had 3 podcasts covering the finale, and we pretty extensively discussed all aspects of Korra Sami. Those aren't required listening for this, but I'm going to try not to tread on the same discussions we had for those. But there's even more to discuss now that Mike and Brian have made posts confirming the validity of the romantic interpretation, of overtly romantic interpretation of the last 2 minutes of the finale, and we have much to discuss on that front. And just, you know, other aspects of Korra Sami that have not yet been discussed, because this is a big deal. A big deal in terms of a social context, a big deal for the show, and our ship, I guess, too. Well, some of our ships, most of us. Anyway. basically everyone. Okay. Basically, you should go read Brian and Mike's posts, which you can find on the
DF
Tumblr.
They both reblogged each other's posts.
Oh, how cute.
Like 10 years after they posted.
I mean, obviously they coordinated the post time, like, because they went up at the same time.
They were texting each other, like,
3, 2, 1. I can imagine that, yeah.
They could have queued it for the same time, but I don't know.
Or they
I don't know if they know how to do that, though.
They have Tumblr themes, so they probably don't know what a queue is.
I also doubt they're seeing each other regularly anymore now the production's done, but I don't know. Maybe they're BFFs, too.
Oh, right, can't bring it up. No.
I mean, maybe this means that they're working on the next project, and they were talking about this during that. Anyway, basically,
I would hope so. 5 Korra Sami, obviously.
Anyway, you should go read those. I'm probably gonna like read a lot of it because we kind of have to talk about it. And honestly, like, Mike's post is great. It's very Mike. It's concise and not too much behind it. Brian's post, though, to me is just
shots fired.
Incredible. Art. Like, if he actually says everything I would have wanted him to address, every single one. I'm not sure how that's possible, and it just incredibly raises my opinion of him even more. I already loved him as a vegan and as a runner of the show,
Dylan's a vegetarian.
I mean, he is. Me. I see. Yeah,
you're not a vegan,
yeah.
You're a vegetarian.
I mean, you know,
he's what you want to be.
It's true. But it's so thoughtful and intelligent and et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I would especially want to talk about certain parts of it. So there's definitely new information here. In general, they basically both just say that yes, it's a romantic ending, and that.
I mean, let's look at their titles.
I mean, Korra Sami confirmed, and Korra Sami is canon. I like how they both use
actually unused episode titles.
Yeah, exactly.
This is what dreams are made of.
By the way, I should say this is incredibly just emotional post for all of us, and yeah.
I mean, I cried for a half hour.
Allie did fall. Yeah.
I'm not getting it.
She was sobbing.
This is small, but it's interesting how it was frequently they use the ship name. They're just very submerged into fandom culture. Shipper. Brian does say he's the first Korra Sami shipper because he shipped it before the show came out. So I guess we can't challenge that.
Wow.
I guess, you know, we can't challenge that, Brian. But
I'll fight him on that.
Okay.
I don't think you'll win, Allie, because I know for a fact that you shipped Korra in the first season.
Mike says he didn't want to say anything right away so the audience could experience for themselves. Interesting. Yeah, we were wondering if they would make posts like this, and now it is. Yeah. They both highlight the how much it meant to them to be able to portray quality. Oh, yeah, Sam will be joining us again in a second. Portray the equal representation, like from a orientation standpoint. They both mentioned that. Brian gets more in depth into it. And just how they're happy how much this has meant for the queer community. And it's pretty incredible that they get this in depth into it. I don't know. I didn't really expect this from them. Certain parts of Brian's post are most notable. I mean, I don't know where we should start, but in the past, I've commented that from a social perspective, the biggest problem with Avatar and Korra's series are the fact that they had no queer representation whatsoever. It didn't seem like any non-heterosexual cis people existed in their worlds, and, you know, Brian kind of addresses that specifically. He says, I'm only sorry it took us so long to have this kind of representation in one of our stories, which to me is, like, what the biggest thing that he says. And, you know, this isn't a panacea. It's not, it doesn't make up for everything. But certainly you have to see it as a net positive considering the media and social impact this can have. This is having, you know, now. Agree, Sam?
I agree, yes.
Just Sam.
Mel? Sam. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Glad
I don't want to. Do you want to?
Him.
Yeah. No. Let's.
Allie,
you
agree?
Basically,
Jesus, God.
This was an around the horn. This was. I was talking for 5 minutes. Let me throw it to someone else. Okay. Let's get into the.
No one hates me, everybody.
Obviously, let's get into the how this came about. You know, because Brian really addresses that in depth in his post. Unsurprisingly, Brian's post is about five times as long as Mike's post. Hashtag chatty Brian, also new hashtag sassy Brian, as someone.
Sassy Brian.
Yeah. And we'll say why Brian is sassy. But he says that after book one, McCore was only end. I'm going to be quoting him several times. Brian says, McCore was only endgame as far as book one. Once we got into book two, we knew we were going to have them break up, and we never have them planned on getting them back together. So, you know, that's it.
That's the end of that.
That's the end of that.
The post, actually.
No, I mean, basically, like, here's the thing. I don't want to get too much into just what a select few, you know, are saying negatively, but they're misinterpreting the show, right? That it was a definitive breakup in book two. And we said as much on the podcast, et cetera, et cetera. I will say that it did at times get confusing between the remaining feelings and the hinting of feelings, right? Those can maybe be confusing. The only one I can think of, though, definitively is the hug in the hug between Mako and Korra in the ultimatum. That was slightly, maybe in retrospect, they should have toned down, you know, like the music cue in that scene. Mm-hmm. But that's it. Once Mako and Korra were through, we focused on developing Korra and Asami's relationship. Originally, it was primarily intended to be a strong friendship. Frankly, we wanted to set most of the romance business aside for the last two seasons. Personally, at that point, I didn't want Korra to have to end up with someone at the end of the series. We obviously did it in Avatar, and even then it felt a bit forced to me. So, which is interesting. This is one thing that's going to rub a lot of people the wrong way. But, I mean, we've commented this several times on the podcast. The Cat Aang ending seems a bit random in the context of the end of book three.
Yeah. Like, they didn't... Yes. It was built up to, especially the first two seasons, there's a lot of, like, forward momentum. And in the first part of book three. But it really dropped off in the second half of book three. And that was one of the things... Like, Cat Aang was my first, like, really big OTP. And I love that ship to death and will always do so. But I think the writing for that ship definitely suffered near the end of book three.
It's like
very
this,
harshly, especially in the finale itself. It was,
well, the tone of it changed because they pushed it for so long. It ended up looking like, instead of, oh, she's, you know, pushing this relationship back because she doesn't want to get attached in case something awful happens / they're in a war, it turned into looking like, oh, he's the hero, so now I gotta go play the guy always gets the girl.
In the more simplistic viewpoint, they set it aside right at the end of book, mm-hmm. end of book two, and it just does seem random that it comes back at the end. And I mean, basically, one point we argued on the previous three podcasts or whatever, which were 6 hours, so I don't expect you to listen to all of them. But
no,
is actually was don't. Actually was 6 hours.
You have things to do with your life.
We don't. But yeah, but yeah. Like,
well, obviously we don't.
But one thing that we basically said was that I think the Kurosami ending is less random than the Cat Aang ending, because the Cat Aang ending was being built up to until the middle of book three, and then it, like, there was some clear romance, and then it just stalled, right? Whereas the Kurosami ending had clear building up throughout the past two seasons, which is, again, something else we talked about the last two podcasts, where the evidence is for it. I guess let's pull that quote from Brian. I think I love how the relationship arc took its time through kindness and caring. If it seems out of the blue to you, I think a second viewing of the last two seasons would show that perhaps you were looking at it only through a hetero lens. Which is way sassier than we would expect it to be.
Okay, but we need to address something, because I've been seeing so many posts where Macquarians are like, they're calling us homophobic. Well, that's not what he said.
Well, again, I would like to not focus too much on what the negative minority is saying, right?
But like, that's not what he said, and like, a lot of people are interpreting it that way.
He's a little bit saying it that.
what he's suggesting there is that it's a little bit of a form of a.
I mean, I would
minor form of.
He's
of,
not saying
of that.
I would
but
say
that's what
that
heteronormativity is.
It's heteronormativity, which I would say this is. I would say this is homophobic. He didn't say that, but I would say that.
I mean, yeah, I'd culture. Say it, but that's not what he's saying.
People do on purpose, yeah. And but they wouldn't defend it if he comes active.
Right. Okay. So here's the deal. There's several people that we know, who we like a lot in the fandom, who I think would not have seen this as any sort of romantic buildup. And these are very nice people. The question is, are they homophobic? I think the answer is slightly yes, because they're not seeing a homosexual relationship as the potential to it exist, right? It's not something that they even considered the potential to be romantic, which Brian basically talks about too. Again, he says everything, but this is a flaw, and this doesn't mean you're like a bigot, but this does mean that you should,
or like a terrible person,
or no, but it doesn't
like
mean
institutionalized homophobia. It's like
it's just the societal thing that you haven't overcome as a person, basically.
Society has trained all of us to view media this way, and that's what's so great about this is that. I mean, it's especially with it not being ambiguous, is like, it's in your face, pay attention to this.
And I mean, let me call myself out on this too. The only thing I said on the podcast, I've had vocal opinions on every single episode of Korra. The only thing I've said was clearly and undeniably romantic was the blush in episode 7 for Korra and Asami. Everything else I said could have been platonic. And I think that is a little bit of societal homophobia. At the same time, I also think that is maybe a result of the way they created scenes, right? There was nothing that was clear romantic. But as if you look back on it, I think it's very clear the build-up. And we not just looking back, as it happened too, we noted it several times that there was enough build-up for this type of ending to happen as opposed to Macquarie. I said, not happening, Macquarie ending. People are like, eh, you sure remember that? Anyway.
And we were all wrong.
But yeah, well, we did not expect this. Where does he talk about the?
It was beautiful, though. I've never been so happy to be wrong in my life.
Let me.
Never.
Before we get into Brian's social justice-y part of his post, which, I, by the way, when I say social justice-y, I mean it in a 100% positive way. Like, a lot of people use that as a dirty word. I use it as a positive word.
Good or bad.
No,
I not a Sally. There you go.
I mean it. I mean it completely positively when I say that. Social justice blogs to me is a positive moniker, which I know not everyone agrees with, but that's how I see it. Okay. Where does he talk about the basically, because there is not clarity on when it was changed. Let me summarize, I guess. So he says that as a year ago is in the script that had the handhold, right? We approached the network, and while they were supportive, there was a limit to how far we could go with it, as just about every article I read accurately deduced. It was originally written in the script over a year ago that Korra and Asami held hands as they walked into the spirit portal. We went back and forth on it in the storyboards, but later in the retake process, I staged a revision where they turned towards each other, clasping hands in a reverential manner in direct reference to Julien Verrick's nuptial pose a few minutes prior. We asked Jeremy to make the music tender and romantic as he fulfilled the assignment Sublime score. So there was not clear. There was a lot of confusion on when this sort of thing happened. They basically say it went back and forth on a lot of stuff. They also say that they, I mean, let's read the paragraph before it. As we got close to finishing the finale, the thought struck me, how do I know we can't openly depict that? No one ever explicitly said so. It was just another assumption based on a paradigm that marginalizes non-heterosexual people. If we want to see that paradigm evolve, we need to take a stand against it. And I didn't want to look back in 20 years and think, man, we could have fought harder for that. Mike talked it over and decided it was important to be unambiguous about the intended relationship. So I think he's calling himself out here, and rightly so. This is something I've said, basically. Many times people are like, the biggest social fault with the show is that there's no non-heterosis representation. Oh, that's Nickelodeon's fault. And my response to that is, do we know that Mike and Brian have ever went to Nick with this? And the answer was no, they hadn't.
Because they had assumed that they would get it, which is
a fault of them, I think. They weren't pushing the boundary on this, and
he admits, he's very
critical of himself here. It's understandable, like, we can understand what them, he might not think that he could do that, but they went to Nick, and Nick was okay with it to a certain extent. Certainly, it's interesting how Nick comes off in his post, because on one hand, they were more open to this than he thought they would be. He says, we approached the network and they were initially supportive, but there was a limit to how far we could go with it. So on one hand, Nick is better than we thought they were. On the other hand, they are limiting this expression, which is a complete negative. And I think overall this is a negative depiction of Nick, because limiting this this depiction is relative to, like, if Nick says you can't have them kiss, that is homophobic and terrible, because Avatar has many straight kisses in it. So this is not something that is good on their end. And they should be criticized heavily for this, right? I mean, you can understand that they might, a lot of people's response to me saying something like this would be, oh, but they would have received a lot of pushback from, conservative groups, and from overseas, they couldn't do that for the overseas distribution of the show. And people treat these like these are definitive practical things that there's no workaround for. It's like, oh, this is how the system works, and this is that. And my response to this is, you can just do it and deal with those things, right? This isn't an excuse.
I mean, they're a multi-million network. Like, really? Like,
Viacom can work its way around this.
Viacom owns everything. Like, really? It's not that, like, they can do this.
1,000 moms or whatever protesting this would not matter.
A million moms.
Who cares?
A
few people investors pull out, big deal.
If you actually care about equality, this is not something that should matter. So I think Nick is ultimately terrible for this, but what do you mean?
Because it's not just Nick that's making the world, like, this awful place by not letting
Certainly it's not. It's not
the fact that, like...
Yeah, it's not Nick's fault that the social paradigm is like it is.
It's, like, being gay is still, like, illegal and...
But at the same time, it is Nick's fault. Because they're ones perpetuating this to children who grow up seeing only straight couples, which is why this is so important. For children to see as some sort of queer representations, they only think straight is normal.
Obviously, I support that. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It's just like Nick isn't the most evil thing ever.
They're not the root cause of this. Yet they kind of are, because they're brainwashing children, and children are the cause of it. So it's interesting.
SpongeBob.
Why do you think of SpongeBob?
Brainwashing. Yeah, okay. Sponge.
I wasn't thinking that, but okay.
Okay, let me read Brian's most social justice-y paragraph, which again is a positive to me. Was it a slam dunk victory for queer representation? I think it falls short of that, but hopefully it is a somewhat significant inching forward. It has been encouraging how well the media and bulk of fans have embraced it. Sadly and unsurprisingly, there are also plenty of people who have lashed out with homophobic vitriol and nonsense. It has been my experience that, by and large, this kind of mindset is a result of a lack of exposure to people whose lives and struggles are different from one's own due to a deficiency in empathy, the latter being a key theme in Book 4. Despite what you might have heard, bisexual people are real. I have plenty of stupid notions throughout my life that were planted there in any number of ways, or even grown out of my ignorance and flawed personality. Yet through getting to know people from all walks of life, listening to stories of their experiences and employing some empathy to try to imagine what it might be like to walk in their shoes, I have been able to shed many hurtful mindsets. I still have a long way to go and I still have a lot to learn. It is a humbling process and hard work, but nothing on the scale of what anyone who has been marginalized and experienced. It is a worthwhile lifelong endeavor to try to understand where people are coming from. Okay. So to me, this paragraph cements Brian as one of my favorite people ever, because this is like how I think, and this is just so incredible.
It's literally a paragraph from Dylan's mind.
I mean, kind of, but like, seriously, one thing you're that I've, literally, but you don't I mean, again, I kind of have a different perspective from you all on this, interacting with people who are, you know, males most primarily in real life, who are kind of inherently going to be bigoted in this regard. And what I see are not bad people who I interact with. In fact, I'm friends with many of them who might not call themselves, even who might say they're not feminists, who might say there's, like, who might push back to things I'm saying on here. And again, this is just, wow, this is just very personal into my views. But, like, I don't see these people as bad people. I think these are not people who have opened up their perspective to others. And that's essentially what Brian is saying. He's saying that it's worthwhile to develop empathy for others. And it's just so... It's such a wonderful sentiment. I completely understand where he's coming from. Also being, you know, a white male who grew up somewhat privileged. You're not going to inherently know this. Like in high school, you're not going to inherently like be sympathetic to other types of people, other types of just walks of life. And there's been points in my life, as Brian says too, where I haven't necessarily been as open as I am now, but it's all about trying to do the best you can and moving forward and learning from others and their experiences. What else does he also mentions? I mean, okay. Setting that as, I mean, I don't know any comments on that, for a more practical discussion. So basically he says that, despite what you may have heard, bisexual people are real. So this is something that's a slightly hard to decode because it is out of context. But what my interpretation of this is that he is saying that Korra and Asami are bisexual. The reason I say this is because he says this kind of mindset is a result of the lack of exposure to people whose lives and struggles who are different from one's own due to deficiency in empathy. Is that why I think he says it? But
I don't know.
How do you read this, Sam, in terms of the bisexual people are real?
How do I read it in terms of the bisexual people? I don't really know. I mean, I guess he is saying, like, using your context clues here, you know, they are bisexual. I mean, obviously there is evidence that they are. I don't know. He is the word of God. Basically.
Right. So
I
guess it would be safe to say that they are, which is like this debate that everybody is having.
Right. So basically the implication is that he's saying that you need to expose people whose lives and struggles are different from one's own. And then he says bisexual people are real. So it's saying you can interact with these types of people. And so it's the implicature is that Korra and Asami are bisexual. Why is this a question, one might ask? Well, because they in the show have not identified themselves as a sexual orientation, and it is not up for us to determine what another person's orientation is. Is it a self? Yeah. It is a self-identifying thing. It is possible they now identified based on before Brian said this. It's possible they identified as lesbian because someone expresses interest in one type of person in the past doesn't mean you have to express interest in the future. It is also possible they identify as pansexual, which is an extremely similar concept to bisexuality. And I'm not necessarily sure Brian is trying to say that they're bi, not pan. Like, he doesn't really get into in-depth like that. And again, essentially very similar concepts. But, so I think he's basically saying word of God they are bisexual.
I think the only important thing to take from this is that they are dating.
Yes. Well, again, we got into that earlier.
Yeah, that they fell in love.
They fell in
love. Dylan and I had a debate about that because of Mike's post.
Well, Mike and Brian say different things.
Well, Brian says the word couple.
So, I mean, getting back to the more basic stuff here, Mike says that the moment when they enter the spirit portal symbolizes their evolution from being friends to being a couple. I think Brian maybe more treats it like that they, I don't know, what's his exact quote here? Anyone have
they
it?
They fell in love.
They fell in love, right?
They fell in love.
It's love. They also grew to have romantic feelings for each other. So they fell in love in a couple of different things, but, you know, whatever.
No, dude, like, you're reading too much into what they're saying.
Why am I reading too much into what they're saying?
They're basically saying the same exact thing.
I agree. I think Brian's maybe
We're playing at semantics here. They can both be at different places in the writing. Like, one of them can be like, oh, they're already a couple. The other one's like, they're just beginning. Like, I mean, they don't have to be in the exact same place, even though that was the whole idea, they are in love.
Yes,
exactly. Well, they can go off and do whatever. That's the whole idea of them going to the spirit world. They'll make it whatever they want it to be.
Whatever, in the Tree of Time or anything. Yeah. I mean, just how silly is it not to see any sort of possibility in that line, right? That's the thing. Pausing for a second on Brian's incredible post, which I'm 100% in love with. Let's talk about, I got an ask today, which is pretty interesting. It's like I remember the like seventh or eighth podcast we ever did. One of the top major topics was, when did Katara develop romantic feelings for Aang, and when did Aang develop romantic feelings for Katara in the series? And Aang, it's like from the beginning, but Katara, it's a really interesting topic. And
Aang's like, he opens his eyes.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. But for, yeah, it's like, oh, for Katara, that's like really interesting because it's not obvious. But now, let's apply this to Korra and Asami. I think
it's interesting because I was giving this a lot of thought over the past couple of days because I was like, huh, when and wherefore?
To me, okay, so I can just say my impression of where I was watching the show. To me, during book three, it seems like, there are several times when I got the impression that Asami liked Korra.
Yeah,
like she's very fawning of her and very willing to do whatever. I don't know about all the seduction eyes specifically, but it's like
I think it's just the way Asami like takes off like glasses and helmets and stuff. Though,
she's
like,
just naturally, she's like naturally gorgeous. Yeah,
person. It's just who she is.
I definitely had that similar vibe, Dylan, because we talked about it when that blush first happened, that was the first time that we got any concrete indication that Korra would like her back, because up until that point it seemed like it was mostly Asami like Korra.
Like to me, by the end of book three, with if you need help or anything, right? That was, I think it's just like Asami by the end of book three likes Korra, in my mind.
Yeah.
Yep,
I agree.
So, I think it might be harder to pinpoint where in book three. Like, is by long live the queen? Do you think so? I think she likes.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to look at it from like where they would have given us cues, you know, there was. I mean, I feel like that hug.
Episode one, you guys.
That hug, because it had a music cue. I think a little one.
Yeah.
Their hug on the airship.
Yeah. So okay,
I don't think it had a musical cue.
Deviating for a second, I think it's interesting to try to read into Brian's post when they specifically decided to go for a romantic ending. Like, one of the big questions was, oh, did they decide this during the planning stages of book three or book four? And reading Brian's post, I don't think there was an explicit decision. I think that it was something that they were trying to do. They decided, you know, either during the planning stages of book two or book three, that this is something they're going to try to do. So they built up their friendship. It's the way Brian made it seem like, he made it seem like it was during the planning stages of book two, right? That this season we're going to break Mako and Korra up, and then next season.
I don't know if that's
gonna
necessarily I think they just knew that in book two that they were going to break up Mako and Korra, and then after that they were like, oh, let's develop her relationship with Asami, which they said they originally didn't intend to just be a good friendship, and they're like,
and then the Korra news happened, and they're like,
yeah,
Korra,
and then they were like,
ooh, they
were like, what, you know, and I don't know at what point during developing at a certain point it ventured into.
Well, so let me get back to this. So he basically the impression I got is, you know, they decide that they're going to go toward, they like the idea of a romantic ending between Korra and Asami, so they start working towards that. And I think it's always just that, which is maybe why it seems there's not less overtly romantic things until the end of book four. Because in book three, it's all about their friendship. He says they want to build up their friendship. And then he says, by the time we got to the end, he basically phrases it like, I mean, we could try to find the exact quote, but I've struggled already trying to find the exact quote.
Which one are you looking at, Brian or Michael?
Brian. Michael.
I've read his Tumblr. I don't know that one.
Brian's post. He basically says by the time we got to the end, Mike and I decided that you know, that we could. But as we got close to finishing the finale, the thought struck me, how do I know we can't openly depict that, right? So it's like almost only at the end when they, if there was any sort of, okay, we're going to do this decision in terms of overt romantic display.
Well, I think it sounds more like they were like, it was the can part. They were like, maybe at the back of their minds, they were like, you know,
they're always thinking, you know, maybe is this what we're going to do?
Yeah, they dig each other, but.
Well, I know, I think that, no, so I think the questionable thing is what they were originally intending ending the series on, and I think it was more of an ambiguous Kore and Asami thing, because they didn't think they could depict the other one. Yeah. So they were still working towards that the whole time. So it was still the same romantic thing, whether implied or overt. So I think that's kind of the conclusion I reach, is that this is something they'd been working for all of books 3 and book 4, basically.
And they got confirmation.
Yeah. And it's just, the only difference is that they decide to go to Nickelodeon at the end to make this as explicit at the end. So back to this Kore and Asami thing. I mean, looking back at book three. I went through six of the commentaries. I'm going to make the post on that on DF Tumblr soon. But the moment when you get Kore and Asami fighting the bandits in episode 3, you get them practicing fighting in episode 4, you get them driving in episode 1.
But episode 1, yes, thank you.
You're going out of order, I don't know.
Production eyes and girlfriends.
I do wonder what they would say about that now, the girlfriends line. Because it's a
I think at that point Asami liked Kore, but Kore was just like, "Yay, a friend!" And then,
I don't know if Asami likes Kore at that point.
I could see the.
I think she might be like questioning.
Yeah, I could see the interpretation that she's like developing feelings, but doesn't really understand it yet. You know.
Yeah.
And I think by the end she like gets it that she likes her.
That sneaky.
By the end of the season, by the end of book 3. Yeah. For Kore, I think it's more interesting because I don't really get the impression at all in book 3 that Kore.
I feel like with Kore, it would be book 4. If
I mean, I think she certainly develops a lot of caring about her. But so basically, the thing I said on Tumblr is that I think this happens kind of off screen during Kore alone. Like at some point within the 3 years, I think Kore probably developed these feelings.
Like especially with the letter.
And she writes to Asami.
Writes to Asami. I think that's a clear romantic indicator. So I think it doesn't have to be romantic just writing to someone, but I think I think that's a pretty good cue.
And I
think
I can only talk to you about this.
Yeah, I also think Janet's line reads there too. Stuff like that. Yeah. By the way, random note about
speaking of Kore Asami shippers.
Yeah, Janet Varney. Oh yeah. Random note on Janet Varney. The way Janet says in the last 2 minutes, she's like, "Mind if we talk for a minute?" Is that what she says?
Sit with me for a minute.
Do you want to sit with me for a minute? It's like the softest thing I've ever heard. Seriously, go listen to Janet's read on that. It's the
if
most.
It's correct, absolutely they recorded that scene together.
Yeah, I think they did. It's absolutely the most high pitched Janet's ever been with Kore. The most affectionate she's ever been.
Have you heard episode 1?
Oh yeah, she did have a higher voice.
I mean, like softly high pitch.
It's like helium, Kore.
Yeah. Anyway,
helium.
No, not that. But so I don't know. Basically, I would say that like, when does she write? When does we? It's been a while since we discussed Kore alone, but Kore writes back to Asami probably around 1 to 2 years in.
Thought it was 2 years.
I think it's 2 years in. So I think it's by the 2 years between the 3 year gap.
I think it's one.
I don't remember.
It's 2 years.
It's 2 years. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, does anyone have other thoughts on this? Do you think this is too early for Kore?
No, I think that's about right. By the time she gets back to the city, I think it's pretty cemented.
I think, but in reunion, it's just obvious as we talked about. Yeah.
Which is funny because Kore's never been good at hiding that stuff.
So I also think this makes sense to me that she would develop it absent from Asami. Now that she was with Asami basically straight for several months and Asami wanted to care for her, Asami wanted to go with her. That's another obvious expression of
Asami wanted to go with her. Would have been down there for 3 years. Did she sign on for that?
I mean, she would have been happy, I think, probably.
Actually, she would have.
Kore probably would have recovered quicker. I think that's one takeaway from this is that
I don't think
if she hadn't isolated herself, is, that much at the bottom of the world, maybe.
I really think that's the takeaway, is that...
definitely, like, an extrovert, and she definitely gains things from being around people. And I think staying in the South Pole for so long definitely... I don't want to say it hindered her, but it slowed progress.
No, I agree. I agree. Like, I think that the one of the big takeaways we get repeatedly is that the biggest thing to help Korra is a support group. And Asami being there for Korra the entire time, I think, would have expedited the healing process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree, just any.
I don't think that's a good takeaway for mental illness in general, but I think in Korra's case, you know, I think this.
Yeah, having a support group, having some people to support you is very important for mental illness. I suffered from depression for a long time, still suffer, but in having people, like when I isolate myself and just hold myself up in my room, is when it gets like really bad.
Yeah,
for sure. That's essentially what she did. She went to the bottom of the world and just stayed there, and it got worse and worse.
Yeah, I also
do that.
Okay.
So that's the thing. Thanks for sharing that, Britt. And yeah, and I think that's a good, I can apply this to myself. I can share that to myself as well. And it's like, I think that, again, I talked about this in our 6 hours of finale podcast we did, but like one of the major takeaways about I have about Korra's mental state in the finale is that I really think the last 2 minutes are showing that Korra, Asami being there so intimately for Korra, is one of the major ways in which she's moving on from her PTSD. I think that's something that the finale.
Well, that's even. I think it was Brian who said it too in his post, where he was like, "It was a relationship built on like mutual caring and that sort of thing," which I think is really awesome and interesting as well. I forget what he actually said, but it was. It comes from a place of just caring about someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sam, can you think of other things in Brian's post which we haven't, you know, hit on yet?
No.
I've kind of talked about it a lot, right?
I literally don't want to talk about it.
Brian's post, okay.
Sam knows it front to back.
Front to back.
the quote.
Well, yeah, no, okay. The only other one is what Sam posts here. But Brian says, but this... okay. No, we need to talk... it's true. There's one thing I haven't hit on yet, which is the backlash to this, right? So let's read this. There's the inevitable reaction Mike and Brian just caved to the fans. Well, which fans? There are plenty of Makora shippers out there, so if we had gone back on our decision and gotten those characters back together, would that have meant we caved to those fans instead? Either direction we went, there would have inevitably been a faction that was elated and another that was devastated. Trust me, I remember Katang vs. Zutara, but one of those directions is going to be one that feels right to us, and Mike and I have always made both Avatar and Korra for us first and foremost. We are lucky that so many other people around the world connect with these series as well. Tano playing the trombone? No, that was us caving to fans. Right, so this is I love this as a conclusion to Brian's long history with taunting the fans about Tano. It's just so good.
Yes. Like,
my favorite Brian quote is still recently, I think it's from this Comic-Con, drunk Brian at the video game party says, "We care about all of our characters except for Tano." It's wonderful.
No, don't. It's we care about all, we love all of our characters equally.
Yeah, exactly. And then him saying that, no, we gave to fan fans on Twitter. It's great. No. One thing that strikes me randomly about this is just how much he's mentioning ship names. He's like, trust me, I remember Katang vs. Zutara. Like, I don't think they've talked as candidly about this type of thing in the past, really.
Because they troll
and move on.
And I'm only starting to get the impression that they really had, like, again, they mentioned Tumblr posts, like, they mentioned they get messages and posts. Like, I really am starting to get the impression they just look at the tags. like, I haven't gotten that impression before, but it does seem like it. I mean, they're probably on the Korosami tag after the end. Like, how could they have not? How could you have done something societally changing and then not look at the Korosami tag?
They did start reblogging Korosami fan art.
There's no way they didn't do it.
Yeah, Mike reblogged Korosami fan art right after he made that post. He's like, I'm free to do it.
No, well, it's I don't, so that wasn't evidence he was on the tag. He reblogged that from his friend Leigh Bardugo. Delaney, who writes the Shadow and Bone series. But yeah, so that's great that she's reblogged Korosami fan art too. Everyone's loving Korosami. But yeah, it's, I don't know.
See what Brian's likes have been.
You can look at Brian's likes, actually. This is kind of, don't let him know, because he'll turn, you can change the option that people can view your likes off. But if you like go to brianconisco.com/likes or whatever.
Yeah, he might be.
He might be. I think this would be the most likely one they would listen to out of all of them. Although they have listened to
If you're listening to this, don't.
Don't.
Where do you go to his likes?
You have to type something in. It's like, brandkinscott.tumblr.com/likes/something/likes, you know. There's a way to do it. I've seen it before. It's mostly just him liking other people.
It's literally slash likes. Got it.
Okay. It's like him liking art of college.
Oh, he liked Mike's post too.
Oh.
So that's cute.
But yeah, I'm glad he addresses the caving thing, right? And I love if it seems out of the blue to you, I think a second viewing of the last two seasons would show that perhaps you were looking at it only through a hetero lens. Like, I just love that.
Shots fired.
Just hashtag sassy Brian, yeah. Brian, if you make a post and then tag it sassy Brian, then you'll win.
We'll know and you'll win.
But anyway, I'm glad he addresses the caving thing because it's bullcrap, and thank you for addressing as such.
They've obviously been in the tags because of all the crap.
The crap,
that inspired that.
So. We are censoring ourselves. But It's that must be so frustrating for them to see, right?
Because it's compromising your artistic integrity too. Because you're basically being told that you don't have a care for how your stories and your characters end when you've been working on this show and this character in this world. Well, not this specific show, but it's been almost 10 years since it's been 10 years, 2005, almost 10 years since Avatar came out, and to be told at the end that you caved and pandered to fans and all this other stuff
it's
ridiculous.
Bull.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I would
it's rude and offensive
if they said that to me.
It's offensive there. It's interesting. Among other things, yeah. And he also says, well, I guess the last thing I'll take from his post is, but this particular decision wasn't only done for us. We did it for all our queer friends, family, and colleagues. It is long overdue that media, including children's media, stops treating non-heterosexual people as non-existent or as something merely to be mocked. I'm only sorry it took us this long to have that kind of representation in one of our stories. Yeah. So, again, the notable thing that they are socially aware and did this for a social reason in addition to, you know, being part of the story and stuff like that. The thing I would say is that I expect him to be legitimate with this and, you know, include representation in their next series as well, right? I think that's the ultimate barometer of whether this is something that he has, it's not just a one-time thing, right? He has now seen, you know, the error of his ways, right? And the fact that he was taking too much of an implied, banning on this. To be the truth and giving too much into societal beliefs about this. And I'm not saying that his next series, you know, just has to be all queer couples, although that's what I would do if I made a series. It would be just, there needs to be some form of representation there. And I think he probably is aware of that based on this post. This is just incredibly socially conscious to me. And especially if they go away from Nickelodeon or other limiting mediums. Like, if they go to Netflix, like, there's just going to be no limits on this. Absolutely none.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that'd be great. Let's talk, I don't know, any other comments on their posts specifically? Maybe we didn't talk about Mike's as much, but Mike's is again shorter.
They fell in love.
He says they fell in love, yeah. Where is that quote?
Most important.
Or is that on Brian's, isn't it?
Hold on, wait, I have it on, because Sam posted it. I have it on my Tumblr. It's on Mike's.
It's on Mike's?
Yeah, Mike said it. Which I have his open. I don't know why I couldn't have just gone to his, but Sam already... Sam put the quote on Tumblr a second ago.
So well, let me read.
I got it.
Okay, you got it.
Oh, wait, I guess Brian... Sam, did you misquote this? Was it Brian or was it Mike?
It was Brian.
I think it was Brian. Yeah.
Okay, so it was like, Korra and Asami fell in love. Were they friends? Yes. And they still are, but they also grew to have romantic feelings for each other.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't say that quote earlier. Yeah, they're friends, yes, and they still... And they grew to have romantic feelings for each other. It's so good, that quote. Yeah, it's so accurate. And it's like, a lot of people are like, why can't you have representation of female friendships? Well, you are, and you're also having representation of queer relationships, right? It's both. It's both. It doesn't...
Working on los dos!
Working on los dos! And let me read...
Why can't you have representation of people who are male and female having platonic relationships with each other?
Well, that's the thing, too, is someone made a really good post on...
Oh, Brian commented on that, actually, about Mako.
Okay. Someone made a post the other day about the use of platonic love in Avatar and compared... I don't know, Dylan might think Katara and Zuko is a bit of a stretch, but they were talking about it in terms of Korra and Mako. It was very good post.
I think it's very. I think it's definitely comparable throughout the last two seasons of Korra. They didn't interact that much, and like neither did Korra and Zuko. But
yeah, they actually made some pretty good.
Well, Korra and Zuko didn't.
Pretty good. Zuko.
I think Mike or Brian at one point talks about Mako being.
I think Brian talks about that.
Yeah.
Good thing they reblogged each other's posts.
So we can see pages. He grew up talking about Mako. He grew up and learned about himself through his relationships with Asami and Korra, and he's a better person for it, and he'll be a better partner for whoever he ends up with. That's not necessarily what I'm looking for, but that's Mako. Wuko? Yeah, Wu. I mean, yeah. But basically, I don't know. The depiction of Mako and Korra as a male and female friendship is you know, obviously good, too. Which is a point to hit on. It's really nice to their interactions in the epilogue. So the last thing I want to read from Brian's or from Mike's is Mike says, I've already read some heartwarming and incredible posts about how this moment means so much for the LGBT community. Once again, the incredible outpouring of support for the show humbles me. As Tenzin says, life is one bumpy ride, and if by Korra and Asami being a couple, we're able to help smooth out that ride even a tiny bit for some people, I'm proud to do my part, however small it might be. So yeah, both very happy with the impact they might be having, and aware and in actively going towards that. And you know, certainly it has had that sort of impact on us, on others, et cetera, et cetera. Let's talk where we are with this.
Mike's post has 20,000 less notes than Brian's.
I mean, to be fair, it is. Brian's is more elegant and stuff. Like, also, Brian's more active on Tumblr. People take his posts more, you know. He probably has more followers and stuff like that, unfortunately. Which he shouldn't, because Mike should also. Let's check in on where we are with this, Korrasami in the finale.
How are
you
doing, guys?
Emotionally, how are you guys doing with this? Yeah.
I'm doing okay.
Allie, how are you with this? How many times have you watched the Korrasami ending, and how are you with it?
Me?
Yes, you.
Oh my god, how many times have I watched? Too many times to count. I'm obviously overjoyed with it. And this post, I mean, I really wasn't expecting them to make a post saying, like, overtly, it's one ship or the
slamming
other.
Slamming it in your face.
Slamming it in your face. I thought they would make a post about, like, hey, this ending is, like, however you want to interpret it. It could be romantic, it could not be, so... When I saw this post, like, waking up to this just was like, what? And then I cried for a half hour, in the good way.
You woke up and got good on crush. It fast, though, good because...
I woke up, I checked my phone, and that was the first post
I was like, on my Tumblr.
So I was like, oh my god, and then I got a text from you.
Yeah, because Dylan was like, Brian posted, and that's all he said.
Yeah, I
slept till 3.
Okay,
and then went to dinner and then came back and was like, what happened, guys?
To me, it's so, the fact that they, like, address them as bisexual is just also really important to me, like, and to, like, a bunch of other people. Like, the fact that, like, these, like, bisexuals exist and, like, these two could be seen as that, it, like, makes, like, the fact that, like, people will be watching this and, like, they can assume that is just really awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's awesome.
It's awesome. It's awesome. I don't need to know. Awesome. You don't need to help prove how awesome you are. I already know.
I already know how awesome.
Yeah,
you're
awesome. Exactly. That's what that was. I just got an email and I want to address it. Even though this is going to be
email or an ask
tough. No, an actual email, right? People email.
Is it Greg?
People
are
podcasting right now.
Greg, do it.
Yeah, and Dylan post on.
It was not Greg. Okay, let me read. I don't know what to preface this with, so I'll just say it. I'm only going to read part of this email. ABL89 says, my question is, will fans of Avatar who are, and this person prefaces this with, watch both shows, fans of the podcast, stuff like that, Christian, my question is this, will fans of Avatar who are conservative Christians, Orthodox Jews, or Muslims still be embraced by the progressive side of the Avatar fandom? I'm not talking about the nasty and hateful people. Those do exist and they make me sick. I'm talking about those of us who cannot endorse Asami due to fundamental difference in worldviews which we possess, divine command versus human autonomy. Okay.
You gotta ask those people, bro.
So, here's the deal.
What are you asking us for?
Well, yeah. The question is: is the progressive side of the fandom going to embrace this?
I mean, hopefully that's why they would be progressive.
So here's the deal: viewing as people who care about equal rights as progressive is a flawed perspective. People like us who care about queer representation and equality are not. I mean, we're progressive given the bigotry of standard society, but we're not progressive in that this is radical, right? This is a fundamental thing that should exist. Here's the deal. I don't care what you believe religiously. I may not have the same religious beliefs as you. I do not care. However, it is not okay for you to use those religious beliefs to endorse bigotry or hatred or discrimination. So it's like you say you have a difference in fundamental worldview. If your different worldview is that you don't think all people are equal regardless of their sexual orientation, then no, that is not okay. I don't really care if that comes from religion or otherwise. That's not an acceptable worldview. I don't believe it is morally wrong for you to hold that worldview as long as you do not voice it. However, that's not a very good thing to, it's not going to say it's okay for you to like hold these bigoted views in your head. Like you should not think that. I know you think it's a difference in worldview, but it's just the way you were reared in bigotry. It doesn't come from religion. It comes from your, a culture of discrimination. And it really does. And I've seen this kind of, I'm going to apply this to people who just don't, you know, like say anything, who are just like silent on any sort of queer topics or anything like that. And it's not okay. It's like, oh, I don't. So let's say someone says, oh, I don't agree with this lifestyle, but I'm not going to not let them live that. I don't view that as an acceptable thing. You're viewing people who are equal to you as different and a different lifestyle and a one that you are implicitly disagreeing with, although you just don't want to limit their rights. I don't really think that's okay. And again, I think you're using religion as an excuse for ingrained bigotry. Other thoughts on that?
I mean, I 100% agree.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you said it because I didn't know if just, I don't, I have nothing to say on the email is what I have to say about that.
I also don't like not saying things to those type of people.
I know
though.
That, but here's the thing, Dylan, is like how, like you want me to respond diplomatically because I can't respond diplomatically to something like that.
Well, I don't know if what I said was diplomatic.
Well, what you said was more diplomatic than what I was said because, and I'm glad that you did say that it's not okay because that's not okay. And it's not okay to say it's a religious belief as well because that's not an excuse.
Yeah.
It's whether it comes from whatever book you believe in or not, it's the same no matter what book it's written in. It's bigotry, it's prejudice, it's harmful, it's offensive, and it's not okay.
Yeah.
It's like if you take what you believe in, it doesn't matter what source what you believe in comes from, if what you believe in is morally incorrect. To conclude, again, doesn't matter where your beliefs come from, if they're discriminatory or hateful. Okay, there you go. So, and this, it's disappointing to see people on Tumblr with the implicit homophobia type of thing, which it's just very frustrating. I'm not saying you need to reblog tons of Kaurasami art to be morally right, but you shouldn't say things. There shouldn't be like there's some sort of difference there. It's hard to draw a line when
people replace Mako where Asami.
That's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
but okay.
Oh my god! Yeah,
not what I'm
talking
about.
Definitely don't do that.
Okay, so I don't know, Sam. How are you feeling about Kaurasami in the finale and again?
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. Yes.
I don't know.
It's pretty surreal, right? Like I did not expect these posts today.
It's very surreal. Like I keep going to sleep and waking up, and it keeps being a thing.
It's still there.
Right? Yeah, it's being a thing.
For the rest of your life, it will never stop being a thing.
It's
I'm
like
gonna
just...
wake up in 30 years. I'm still gonna be like, this isn't real.
I don't know. It's something about this actually happening, not just like a victory for like your ship or whatever, but just being like, this is a part of me that is on the television that I never thought I would see.
Yeah,
like represented, like on this network,
on like
any really sort of like media that isn't specifically aimed for, you know, people like me. It's there, it's breaking into the mainstream. And I think it's really surreal that this is happening, but it's happening.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like it's that, and it's also like it's happening for our favorite show too, or whatever
yeah.
show we're
yeah,
exactly.
for.
Like,
yeah.
something we've invested our life in so much, and
that
it's right here on screen.
Too, because I saw, like, I mean, I liked Ship, like, Bubbline, is that how you pronounce it?
I say Bubbling, but whatever.
Like, Bubbline, like, and like that, and I was just like, oh, like, those are awesome. I wish we could have that for Korra, but we probably never will. And then it's just like, oh my god.
Yeah. Something I was thinking about, I think, the other day was that, you know, again, this is a show, well, not this specifically, but, like, Avatar included. It's something that, like, you know, I grew up with and came of age with. And, you know, most of my friends are from this fandom. And, you know, in the process of, you know, 8 years, a lot of my friends, you know, did come out and did, like, sort of realize these things about themselves. And for this to happen on the show is very significant because it's sort of like a love letter to myself and to my friends. You know what I mean?
And their posts kind yeah. of were a love letter, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like we didn't know they cared. And not only do they care enough to put it in the show, Mike and Brian, I mean.
And they care enough to defend it.
And they care enough to defend it. There'd been no evidence in the past that they cared about this. That's the thing. I mean, we don't know them personally, obviously. And that's...
Like before, they had just been like, "Yeah, it's valid."
And like, as much as they're some of the most visible creators actually in all of television, at the same, we still don't hear that much from them. They're pretty private with most production and stuff like that. We still get the most information out of the select interviews they do and commentaries, and it's so this type of thing is pretty pretty blindsiding. Also, because they're probably not willing, they didn't like. It's the same thing they said in the post. They didn't think they could probably talk about it on the same level. They couldn't put it in the show, you know. Until
like, I was gushing, and I'm a straight white girl who doesn't really even ship Coruscant all that much.
Come on.
I
don't
really ship it really hard, but still.
Britt's still hanging onto that Masami train. One hand.
One hand.
Like, a pinky, like maybe. No, I'm like that one dude in the one video where I'm, like, standing between two trucks. And one's
oh,
the
God.
Truck.
Tell them what video you're talking about.
But, and, you know, I'm
Maybe we'll rise again.
I love you guys.
Oh, love you too, Britt. But, like, it's
you guys. Yes.
Even if you don't ship it, you can acknowledge it, and that makes me happy.
I mean, it's so, like, that's what it is. Like, it doesn't matter what you ship. That's what's so important about this, is that...
Like, as long as you, like, acknowledge it, then, like, that's cool. But there's
so many people who
refuse to.
Like, this was good. Like, this was a good ending in general, which is why I'm, like, so
big
happy.
Big win. For
big win with
TOTP. Like,
big win.
One, it was two, and two was just well written. Like, it may not be my favorite, but it's okay to that not be your ship. And
it's okay if you don't ship
for to be okay with that.
But
you know what I mean?
That's what's so
you're
great
allowed
about
to
this.
Have something else be your aesthetic and it not be perfect, and you like it. Like, I had to learn to accept that. This is what I shipped, and the reasons were irrational, and it doesn't really matter. But this is what happened in the show. And what happened in the show was important, and it was well done, and it was beautiful. And if you think something else, it's probably not for a very good reason.
I think that was phrased really well. I just think, I guess emotionally with the, just very, still incredibly, I mean, is that ever going to not be the most emotional scene of television for me to watch? I'm not sure that will ever be true.
It hasn't worn off for me yet.
And that
I've
come that
taken
comes
so many laps around my
like I've rewatched it
at
so
1 in the morning.
That comes after the book 3 finale being my like previous like most emotional thing in television too. It's crazy. Yes, Delaney.
And I thought that like when I was 9 watching the however old I was watching the Katang, you know, the finale, I was like, I'm going to turn it off if it's Zatara. Oh my god, I hate Zatara. And then, like, I was so happy Katang happened, but this, like, I can't even express, like, how important and amazing and beautiful this was to watch. And, I mean, Avatar's been there for, like, I needed Toph so much growing up. And I, like, and it's just now that I'm beginning to realize how much I needed that character. And now Kurosami and, like, beginning to, like, understand and, like, explore, like, you know, how I feel and, like, who I am. Like, this will never be, like, I don't think I'll ever, like, stop crying or screaming or, like, being giddy every time I watch it. Like, I've lost count of how many times I rewatched it. Like, I'll loop it. Like, I'll just keep bringing it back to that last 2 minutes. Like, just watching it over and over and over again.
I want to watch it right now.
Yes, same.
Like, yeah, just stop the podcast and watch
every
it
time
now.
I think about it, like, I just grin, like, and then I look at screenshots and it's like, oh, this is real, this happened, and I mean, surreal is the only word. Mm. And I think that's the beauty of it, that, you know, that's how special it is, that, you know, it'll never wear off.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to look back on Korra as a series after the direct emotions from the show go away. It's like, I would say that, I'm always going to feel as passionately about the series, but I look back at Avatar and I really don't feel as passionately as I was during and after Avatar. Like, I mean, I couldn't ship anything harder than Kat Aang during Avatar, and I don't have any energy for the ship, honestly, right now.
Well, I think it's characters for me. It's like Toph. Like, Toph's what matters to me most, even more than Katang.
Yeah, I mean, I'll still...
How dare you?
It's also different because these characters were from Avatar were like presented in the comics and in Korra, and it's different now. It's like, I don't know, I don't feel as much attachment to the Katara in Korra as I do to the one in Avatar, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know, as of now, we're never getting anything after this in any form, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe, hopefully we'll get the Kurosami Spirit World Adventures comic, you know, that is just begging to be released.
Ah, Gaga.
Wow, that was
so looks so good.
How about for more, I don't know, this hour has been dominated by...
Oh my God!
Ryan's personal views and my personal views, but how about lightheartedly? What do we think is going to happen with, from a realistic perspective, when Korra and Asami get into the spirit world?
Tree of Time.
Well, I mean, I wrote a fic already.
Tree of Time. Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it because what if I want to write it and I don't want other people to write
it? Well, you don't. I don't think the fic is necessarily like in the same expression of realism as the.
They're going to walk around and they're going to go hike up some mountains and talk to some
It's interesting because I don't think, like, because I think of... Oh, God.
And hold a hand.
And
then there's going to be, like, an awkward kiss.
Brit has not a care in the world.
And then they're
going to
stare at each other.
Dude, no, is it? That's
anyway.
That's staring, and then they're going to kiss some more. And then it's just more normal. And then they're going to go to Tree of Time.
Jesus.
Okay.
Anyway.
No, okay, how about this? Do we think they're going to kiss anytime soon?
No, God!
Anytime soon upon entering, right?
Anyway, here's Wonderwall.
The interesting thing, though, is that I always thought of Spirit World as, like, an extremely dangerous place because of how much goes wrong when we're there. So I'm like, Asami, really?
She's literally the only one who hasn't been to
Spirit World. Someone pointed that out on Tumblr. Like, literally she's always the one sitting there while, like, Korra is, like, in the Spirit World. Yeah. But that's the thing. It's because, like, I think about it, I was like, oh, where are they going to go? And I was like, no, that place is dangerous? No, that place is definitely dangerous.
Yeah,
no,
they're going to go find Iroh, and they're going to go find the Korra frog.
Yeah, definitely Iroh.
That's like, and they're going like,
to be drinking tea together, and they'll be like, oh, he's on the ball for your dream.
Like, I was thinking of locations, you know, when I was writing my own fic. I was like, Fog of Lost Souls, no, don't go there, that's bad. Like, the only locations we have
in the
Spirit World are bad.
Well, they're gonna enter in the flowery place that we saw.
Yeah, they're gonna end up in which everyone has written in the flowery place.
I still haven't read any fanfiction, I need to get on that.
Read mine, bro.
I mean, I think one of the most obvious ones is Korra's gonna introduce Iroh to Asami, right?
Yeah.
Or Asami to Iroh, you know.
And they hang out in the same time canon.
And then Asami and Iroh probably play Paisho.
Yes.
And then Korra will immediately regret the decision because they spend like 5 hours doing it.
Because they ignore her. Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, oh, Korra, you're still here.
Just hold on.
Korra's like passed out, like, oh my God.
And, I don't know. Something I heard was that, I forget who said this, but like they have very small backpacks, and it's like, how are they?
Yeah. No. What's funny is Asami's backpack's a lot bigger than Korra's. It's like, jeez, Asami, what's
she got? Well, Asami doesn't know what she needs to bring. She's never been there before.
Is it gonna rain in the spirit world?
Does it rain in the spirit? I just imagine the conversation. Like, does it rain in the
spirit world? Someone write a fic of then Asami, Korra helping Asami pack, and Asami just asks the most ridiculous questions about the spirit world.
Is there a sun that sets in the spirit world?
No, I'm like, talk to Wayne. Like, there's not day and night in the spirit world. It's based on Korra's emotions too, like her emotional state.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, if it's based on their emotional state, of them being romantic, what's that gonna
piss me off while we're in there, or else it's gonna be
don't wait. Wait, what happens though, like when like it gets a little heated, like what happens to the spirit world? Like, does it start like raining fire or something? Like, what happens?
Everyone dies.
Yes.
That's the story of how everyone died.
I don't, other things that could happen. I mean, it's like Korra introduces Asami to the Macora frogs. Like, yeah.
They run into that II. Yeah.
To what? To Iway?
I.
The II spirit. I don't know if he's there. I don't know if he's there. Yeah. Not clear.
I mean, I don't. What about
the little yellow? The little yellow spirit.
Little cutie. Little cutie.
And the stupid flying bunnies.
And
this is the best.
My other
care.
Little cutie.
Yeah. And what's the name of that
owl? Little cutie. Oh, maybe.
They go to the library.
No, they're not going to go visit Wanchitong.
Asami would go nuts over a giant lion.
Yeah, but Wanchitong's going to be like, oh, sorry, bro. No hard feelings, right?
No hard feelings for totally betraying you to your uncle and boss.
Do they ever bring Jinora too to help?
No,
because she can help. She can go to like unavailable places and stuff like that.
No astral projection. They call Jinora up like, help us find this in the library.
No, it's like this is something I'm gonna have in. This is something I'm gonna have in my fic. But like Jinora like checks in on
Dylan. That ruins the fic.
Jinora checks in on Korra and Asami with the astral projection. Yeah.
Astral projection.
It's like, how you guys have been gone for like 3 weeks, you know, how's it going?
Yeah, that's the other question I have, is how long is this vacation?
Yeah, that's my thing. It's like,
as long as they want.
And despite everyone talking about it, I'm like 500% sure they had to tell someone. Like, they were like, guys, we're gonna go, bye.
Probably Tenzin.
And then Mako's head exploded.
Probably don't tell Mako. Probably not.
He probably nodded and was like, okay. I can't imagine him being like all that mad.
No, his head's going to literally explode.
I feel like he would be like, well, what about me? Like,
and then Wu winks letters. At Mako. Wu turns and winks at Mako.
I didn't tell Wu because Wu would want to come.
Yeah, Wu would be like...
No, Wu's glad because he's like, now it's just me and Mako. And then, like, sure, Wu and Mako can do stuff.
Could you imagine, though, like, what...
I'm going to write it. While they're in the spirit world, Wu and Mako go on the actual smoothie date they needed.
No, but, that's like, Wu continues to hit on Korra and Asami, like, gets closer and closer to ripping his face off.
Yes.
Yes.
Hmm.
And then Asami does send him on that train.
Bye, Wu.
Bye, Felicia.
If there was going to be like a thing that we could, it's like, we know Katara and Aang's like history, you know, based on the implied stuff from the future series. Like, what would Korra and Asami be if, like...
Okay, Asami is the president of Republic City.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Korra is still the Avatar.
Well, she's still the Avatar.
I'm glad she didn't get rid of that, because that didn't go so well.
They have some children, but they spoil everyone else's children.
Yeah, see, do you think they would have kids?
No. I don't
think
they would have kids. Maybe the worst parents.
Asami doesn't know what the frick to do around kids.
Like, they don't get it.
And no one wants
to be the most awkward parents.
There is that post of Asami being awkward with
their
kids.
Asami, what do I even do around children?
See, though, but Korra is good with kids.
Yeah.
Korra's a good babysitter. That doesn't mean she's a good raising childrener.
True.
Raising
children. Also, I don't know what you're like, a good parent. They're like 21 years old.
Yeah, they are young.
Raise a child, but
yeah, it's true.
Brett's maybe right in there. Like 10 years.
Yeah.
Also, I don't think, like, I don't know. It's just...
They're going to be all the airbending babies in Bopal's children's, like, cool aunts.
That's what I was thinking. Like, they're just cool aunts.
They tell me we'll take
Jinora's,
them shopping.
Jinora's cool aunts.
Yes.
No, like, perfect. Jinora and Kai's... future children's cool aunt.
Not in my
let's
favorite.
Get real. They're actually Jinora's cool aunts, though.
Actually Jinora's cool aunts. And Jinora ships at hardcore.
She does. No, seriously, if you look in the screenshot.
Oh, Jinora's staring
ships
at
the post comparing
Jinora knows what's up.
Comparing Sokka looking at Aang.
They're married.
Yeah, that's the best one.
Yeah,
Sokka,
they're married.
Jinora looking at her with the raised eyebrow, and she's like, I see you.
Yeah, I see you.
Yeah.
I think they'd be married. Would they be married by Bolin or Jinora?
I don't know, but according to Colin Heck, he hopes that there's an open bar.
Yeah.
Yes.
Director Colin Heck making the sassiest posts about hashtag sassy Colin, too, now. Yeah.
Everyone's so sassy today.
It's I mean, they don't care anymore. The series is over. Who cares?
Flashlights to get out.
Yeah.
What the hell is that?
No, I don't
so
get
much
it.
Shade, they need
I don't get it.
Shit!
Okay,
not.
I got it, Mel.
I'm not
I
playing
you.
Your games, Dylan.
Oh, okay. What's your favorite Kurosami moment from the series?
Oh my god!
Not including the last 2 minutes.
All of them.
Well, okay. Here are your choices. One,
Blush.
Them driving.
Why are you giving us choices? What the heck?
Dylan, just let them pick.
Okay.
Blush.
Yes.
I mean, ironically, I don't know. See, because
in
like,
the drive, everything.
I
about
like
them.
The talk in the wheel, like when she's yeah. making her for the
talk in the wheel mobile.
Yeah. I was gonna say wheelchair, but then I was
in the wheelchair. I thought you were gonna say car. And you just you couldn't find the word.
The wheel mobile.
No, like the talk when she's like, "I'm here for you if you need anything." But you know what I found really interesting is that whole scene at lunch. Not even just the blush, like how pissed Asami got when she was like questioning like the decision like about her dad, which we talked about that when it happened. We were like, that's like something
they're
that
all tied for me.
That's so, kind like, a of couple with the anger you'd have at like a significant other. And then Mach was like, what's going on with you two? Like, just that whole lunch is great.
Yes, it's so wonderful.
I think we've talked about before how well Mike and Brian just write dinner scene, like them just people just eating in general.
Yeah, they really do those scenes really well.
By the way, Jana Varney said truth and linked to Brian's post on Twitter.
Yeah,
Janet is the biggest correspondent.
We know Janet is
after Brian. Yes.
Also, I love that compilation of like all the time she was like Asami, like in
the commentary. Yeah,
so great. She's like, oh, look at her, even from the back. She's great.
She's so pretty.
Literally said that.
She did literally say that.
I think. The Kurosami scene in the clips episode is just gorgeous. I really like that.
Okay, when you say what's your favorite Kurosami moment, when are we starting from?
Ever.
Okay, all the good ones are.
Well, there's the only one from book one is the racing scene, right?
Exactly.
That one's really good. That one's my favorite.
You want me to so take good. You for a spin?
So great.
Yes.
I think I like the one.
Yes, I do.
I do. Yeah. I mean, it's happening now, so it's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
In the Tree of Time.
No. Yeah. Look, guys, Bachu lived there for like 10,000 years. That's not really the place.
That's not the purpose of the Tree of Time, though. Like, he's not there now.
Yeah, but
so
he's
chill.
Been in there.
Like, I mean, and Bachu is in Korra now, so it makes sense. He's returning to
the Tree. Yeah, it's chill. It's chill.
And then Rob is being really helpful. He's going to call him on the phone, and Udalak too, and Kaviris will be like, no, guys, don't talk to me.
I need that crack pick like, where they go into the Tree of Time. They're like, why is there a telephone here? I need that crack pick right now. Please write that.
Bachu, who are you calling? You don't have any friends. Rafa was your only friend.
They pick up the phone and like they're like, Amon?
Yeah.
Needs to happen.
That'd be good.
Didn't
go
you
out, write it, crack fix, go.
You know, it was really unclear.
Very good friends.
What other Kurosami stuff can we talk about?
I just want to scream. It's so great.
It's funny now because now all I want to do is go back and watch book three and be like, it was all on purpose.
Yeah, I know.
It's all real. It's all on purpose.
We do a book three, book four marathon now.
Yeah,
I mean, right now. It's 1:30 in the morning.
Not for Ally, but
like running book three commentary, like insane.
How about struggles with the future Kurosami relationship?
I mean, I think it's always the big struggle is dating the Avatar in general.
Yeah, well, it's also
Asami's
just incredibly
busy.
Asami's too, though,
right? Tied to Republic City.
Yeah,
she can't leave, and then Asami.
Well, actually, she probably
almost has to leave everywhere.
She needs a lot of emotional support, and I feel like sometimes Korra is gonna. Not.
Yeah.
Or not.
Gonna
not.
Asami today, I'm just gonna not. I need you to.
Like, I think we can all say that Asami is kind of like an INFP personality, or at least on that kind of the spectrum where she's.
Wait, which one is that? I don't have them memorized.
I think it's the dreamer. But, you know, she's a person who needs a lot of emotion, a lot more emotional support. That's just who she is, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, for better or worse, she's more emotionally, I don't want to say complex, but she's more in touch with what she feels.
In touch. Yeah.
And she'll be, like, talking to Korra, and Korra's just going
to
be nodding.
Really, Dylan.
I love that
I feel
post.
Like Asami dated a really emotional person.
What was that post where it was like Korra was like, when Wu went to the bathroom and Asami, or Korra said to Asami, she's like, wait here, I'm going to go check it out. And Asami's like, okay,
don't take three years.
So great.
I think that is one of my favorite scenes of theirs, though, looking back, is them being all arguing.
I love that scene when she like freaks on her.
Yeah.
I love it when my babies fight, yes.
I love when you fight.
Yeah. Yes.
Because that, when you fight, that means that you care.
Yes.
Exactly.
Which is then honestly what that means. Like, you don't get mad about someone like that. Like, if Mako said it, she would have been like, whatever, shut up. But the fact that I think that, you know, Korra was the one who was judging her, she was like, excuse you, me.
Yeah.
I think she would have gotten mad at Mako just because Asami is defensive.
Well, she wouldn't have gotten mad at the level she got mad.
No, she would not.
She would have been like, shut up and gone about her day with, you know, Korra struck a chord. And then because
they fell in love.
She's like, let me bring tea to the girl who can, like, self-heat herself.
Yeah.
And I'll use the excuse, I think she's cold.
Yeah.
Not true. A sweater, but tea. Yes, this is a good plan.
Because Korra doesn't wear sweaters or sleeves.
What if Asami had taken her sweater? I think I would have cried.
Like, even in the winter, Korra doesn't wear sleeves. It's very strange.
No, that's she grew up in the South Pole, like, so she probably doesn't get cold.
The biggest lesson I learned from the Legend of Korra is that Korra will use every excuse possible to show off her shoulders.
If I had shoulders like that, you would too.
I mean, for real, though. If I looked like Korra, I would wear tank tops all the time, too.
I would walk around in a bikini. 40-degree weather.
Okay, so as great as this discussion is. What?
Dylan, don't lie, you would too.
Yes, I guess. I don't know. We're discussing Korra's stuff again. Why?
Dylan, what do your shoulders look like?
Oh my goodness. What?
We're discussing Korra's fashion choices.
Yeah,
how
great.
Is this wrong?
What other topics before we... Any other Korra's
feelings? I
wonder
how Seychelle feels about this.
Seychelle seemed pretty pumped.
She's pretty chill with it.
She's reblogged. She's retweeted.
She's retweeted something before, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. They cool.
Yes.
They cool.
They cool.
I don't know. And other topics we haven't covered. Are there anything involving Korra Sami?
I don't know.
Open
bar at the wedding? Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully, yeah.
Please.
Please.
Hey, wedding please. Soon.
I don't want to pay.
Who says you're invited, Mel?
I am Asami.
Oh, well, if you're Asami, then I guess so.
But Ali's Korra, does that mean we're having a podcast wedding?
Podcast wedding, yeah.
Yes.
Wait a minute. I don't know. Yeah, any last things? I think we covered their posts pretty well.
We'd kill Ali if we got married, so...
You already kill her now, so... You
know. I know, just imagine how worse it would get if we got married.
How much worse? Yeah, it's...
Worse death.
I think we covered their posts pretty well.
Asami, go home, you're drunk.
Yeah. Yeah, someone said Colin and asked. There's like, I love Colin. And Colin Heck said, Asami, go home, you're drunk.
Colin Heck is the best.
It's pretty great. I hope they all discuss it openly now, yeah.
I wonder what they talk about in an animation circle.
Clearly, they talk about Korra Sami a little bit.
Clearly, yeah, Sami totes.
Sami, go home. You're drunk. I wonder how Kuvira feels about all this.
I think Kuvira would ship it.
I don't think she cares.
I think Kuvira would ship it.
Kuvira's like, huh.
That's what we can talk about. Who ships it?
That is interesting. Who ships it?
Yeah, I think Lin ships it.
Everybody except Mako.
Well, Lin would be like, of course y'all are together. I knew this like 500 years ago.
Of course.
Well, Lin
would be like, aww.
Yeah.
Jinora.
Yeah. Obviously Jinora.
Sue would be like the really irritating, like, you know, she'd be like the really helpful mom. Like, do you need any snacks?
God, I love
you. She'd be like the mom from Mean Girls. That'd be Sue. Snacks?
And Korra's parents obviously are like, oh, girl, we knew that.
Yeah,
like girl. Well, remember when Tonrak gave Mako that like grimace, and then she was like, "Here's Asami," and he was like, "Hey, what's up?"
Yeah, not Dad approves.
Well, presumably Korra is going to tell her parents that she's going to the spirit world with Asami, so
presumably she told someone.
She'd probably tell them.
But if they didn't tell anybody and they just left,
yeah.
But if they didn't tell anybody, and then some other crap went down. They're like, "Where's the Avatar?" And then they're just like. You know, swimming in, like, I don't know, an oasis or something.
Like, elbow guys.
Where's Asami? I wonder if their disappearances
yeah, I wonder.
What if a bunch of more crap goes down after they leave, though, and their vacation gets interrupted?
Oh, wait,
exactly.
That would be
happens.
Where season 5 would start.
Because?
Season 5. No.
Season 5, Korra
Sami.
Don't.
I knew what you were about to say. Yes. Don't.
Mel got it.
We need the mini-series of them just going through the spirit world.
Yes,
going through the spirit world.
Yeah.
Yes. Mel, you write, I'll draw.
Okay, we've played this game before.
Yeah, like that would even get past one line. Yes. Of,
listen!
of you guys working on
it. I already, I've got mine epic started.
Many.
Dylan, you need to have more faith in us.
I don't really write multi-chapter stuff.
So that's what's important. That's what's so special about this to me is that this is my first real attempt at a multi-chapter fic. Like, this is, like, I need to write this to survive.
I've done this before, I just don't feel like it. I don't know.
Write a screenplay. You've written a screenplay.
I have.
Write the,
So you write the screenplay.
Write the Kurosami screenplay and then send it to Nick.
I'd have to write in order or else nothing would ever get done.
Send it to Nick and then...
No, that's not how that works.
be like
Nick has the rights.
License this.
To commission the screenplay.
Call Nick up and say,
No, I got my plan, you know, I get my first couple screenplays published, I get some books published, I develop a sphere of influence, I talk to Nick about it, I get some contacts. I say, here's a screenplay, why don't you give this another go?
Yeah.
Or
buy the rights from them after you get rich on your first screenplay.
Do you know how much the rights would cost?
For Quora?
The rights to books aren't that expensive.
If they're not doing anything with it, then maybe.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean they're going to be like, oh yeah, here's the rights for dirt cheap. They're going to be like, oh, well, we're not doing anything with it, but we're going to make you pay a crap ton for
it. Okay, this is the bad
what
discussion.
Are we even, what's happening?
Yeah, okay, let's wrap things up.
I think we got slightly off topic. Just slightly.
I've been your main host, Dylan. Co-hosts have been Mel, Sam, Delaney, Britt, Ali. Tech directors, AJ, Kevin, Jeff. Musical credits, the Yoshida Brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman, Luke Tripp, Logan, Brandon by Kevin, Dong Fing done by Jake, special contributor, Gareth, contributors, Sierra, Nick, Devin, Lexi, Colin, Gretchen, Britt, Nathan, Jamie. Podcast schedule. This was the one of them. I mean, the reason we did this so recently is because I wasn't convinced we're going to be able to find the time to do it in the next week.
It's nice because it's raw reaction.
I
mean, hey, if you got a recording of me crying, you can put it in here too.
Yeah, we'll just do that right now. No, JK.
Ali, cry like you did.
Cry right now.
I can't.
Future podcasts, we're probably going to do a Quora lists, just where everyone makes a top five list, and then talk about it.
I mean, let's just leave it open, though. I mean, of course we're probably going to podcast a Kurosami at least 500 more times.
I mean, I don't know.
At least.
There's not that much more to discuss, you know?
I mean,
Except obviously there is. Episode rankings podcast, we need to schedule that. That's the biggest one. And we're going to talk about the Rift, all three parts. And
God, who cares about that?
I care. The Rift was actually good.
Except Lynn's dad's not in it, so why do I care?
I mean, that's a good point, but...
Sue's dad, though. He's in it because it's
Sokka. Well, because it's Sokka, but we don't need it.
Listen, there's no confirmation of that. There was no two huge posts
look
about
that. Look at Sue, then look at Sokka.
But I mean, it's totally
Sokka. Because Sokka's the only darker-skinned person in the entire world.
No, but it's still totally Sokka.
She had his pipe. That was a very
important
pipe.
Wu's got pretty dark skin, too, in his Earth Kingdom.
Listen, she sucks though.
Okay, whatever. I can't. You...
Anyway,
I have a name.
Parents are.
What do we? I don't know. Whatever.
Because the
Sami go home. Your
obviously, like, not Kurosami. Yeah, Sami go home. Your friends.
Any last thoughts on Kurosami?
This changed my life. I liked the way that the Zurich wedding kind of framed.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I specifically said. Yeah.
Especially if you listen to that speech again. If you go back and listen to Bolin's speech.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, the second time I rewatched it, I was like, this is Kurosami, this speech,
I want someone to stick Sami's head and Korra's head on those characters.
Despite the fact that we literally have the same exact pose and scene with their actual heads and bodies.
They need to be in a wedding scene.
Oh my god.
Anyway. Okay, let's...
Oh, what if Iroh... What if they just get married in the spirit world?
I mean,
well, that's what Colin Hex said, basically. Right?
A lot of people have been saying Bolin secretly married them before they went off to the spirit world, and that's their honeymoon.
They're going to go to spirit world, and Iroh will marry them.
Y'all need to get a little bit older before you get married.
Y'all.
Well, I mean, they're 22/21.
I don't know, Allie. Do you want to get married at 22/21?
Maybe.
I'm 21, and I don't want to get married.
I'm 22, and I don't want to get married.
Listen, if I find an Asami...
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Where's my Asami?
The question.
That's all of our questions.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're gonna end on Kurosami, I assume. But is there something else we can end on?
like Sassy Briar.
Asami Go Home,
you're
drunk. Sassy Briar.
Yeah, I like Asami Go Home,
you're drunk. Great one.
Asami Go Home, you're drunk.
Go with Sassy Briar.
Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. 1, 2, 3, Sassy Briar, Korosami.
Korosami. Asami Go Home, you're drunk.